KZSU, Stanford University's FM radio station, broadcasting across the Bay Area on 90.1 FM and across the world at KZSU.org.
From the offices and studio of Gensler in San Francisco, California, this is the Arts Principles Show with Art Gensler and host Tom DiOro. The show is based on Art Gensler's best-selling book, Arts Principles. Our show features one-on-one insights, experiences, and even follies of over 50 years of hard-earned lessons in building a world-class professional services firm. Our show will also feature thought leaders, founders, and game changers committed to ideas, innovation, and a better build environment. Hosted by architecture aficionado Tom DiOro and the founder of Gensler, Art Gensler.
Thank you, Joseph. Our guest today is Art Gensler, architect, entrepreneur, and founder of Gensler, now one of the world's largest and most recognized architecture and design firms. Find them on the web at Gensler.com. That's Gensler.com. Art, this is our inaugural show, and thank you very much. We're honored to have you on your show, Arts Principles.
Well, I'm honored to be here. I get a chance to talk to people often, but this is a really special opportunity for me to share my thinking and find out what people are interested in. So I'm interested in the comments and questions, and I hope I can provide some answers.
Excellent. Now, Art, I think it's interesting that you're interested. When was Gensler formed or founded? 65, was it?
1965, we were started. We really opened our first official office in January 1, 1966, but I started in the fall of 65 and had the opportunity to do the interiors of the Alcoa building then, now One Maritime Plaza. But it gave me a chance to have a little business, and I thought it would hopefully grow to five or six people. And somehow it got away from me, as now we have 6,000. But the joy of starting a firm, and I had no business plan, I had no money, I had $200 in the bank, I had a wife and three children, three boys, and I never looked back, and it's been a great run, and it's still going, and the firm's going very, very well. And so it's an opportunity to share some of the experiences that I've had over the last 54 years.
Excellent. Now, what inspired you for Arts Principles?
Well, over the years, I make notes on everything, and I have note cards that I use for talks, and I have clippings that I thought that I can use in something, but I never knew what exactly I want or how I wanted to share it. First, I've got an audience called the people in Gensler, but I believe that if the whole industry is better, then the bar raises for everybody, and we just have smarter competition, which makes us grow and change. And so I've made it a policy that I've tried to share my thinking and ideas about how to lead a professional design service firm. And this applies to lawyers and accountants and even doctors and other groups of people that are interested in leading professionals, which is different than people who are very smart and very interesting, but are not in the professional world. And winning for us is not how big pile of chips we have. Winning for us is doing great work, making an impact on society and the places that we work in, make companies better, and let our people grow and have a great future.
That future, it sounds like, as much as you're recognized, of course, around the world, it sounds like there's a beginning. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like there's actually a beginning. It sounds like you're starting up. I know you're not, but there's a fresh new outlook on, you know, your contribution.
Well, I didn't know enough not to know what I didn't know. And I just sort of did things because they seemed like that would be an intelligent way to do things. As I went along, I found people did things quite differently than I was doing them. And it was all about the individual, the architect, the designer, and their projects. And for some reason, I can't tell you why, I thought it was about the client's project. So it's not about me and I, it's about we and us. And that's a very different philosophy than most professional firms take. You know, they want to get the recognition, the name of whoever was. And so we have a phrase now, which is, we have a constellation of stars. We just don't have a few stars with their name on the door, but a whole constellation. So it'd be a very long name if we just put all the key players on the door, and that's probably part of the way it ended up just being called Gensler. And maybe I'll have a chance sometime to tell the story of how the name got changed. But the idea has been that, and there's nobody in our scale anymore, because we're like three times the size of our nearest competitor in terms of number of people and projects. We've had to invent our own rules and our own culture. And we're very culture-driven. And so the idea of the book was to share some of the thoughts on culture that I have developed and we have developed as we've gone along. And so we've taken ideas and from almost anywhere and tried to incorporate them that we thought were make us a better firm and help our clients and provide better services and better results. So I've been collecting all these ideas, but I could never quite figure out how to put them in some form. And I thought maybe writing a book. I was sick with a horrible staph infection about 5 years ago. And I did an oral history for Berkeley. They did 20 hours of interviewing me. And it was an interesting experience. And I was sitting in my house because I couldn't walk. And they would come over and video me and tape me. And then they've typed it all up, which is interesting. So if you, you know, the Berkeley has an oral history of a lot of different people, and I happen to be one of them. But it was an interesting process. And I started to think about ideas more than that was sort of a recording of the founding of the firm and how it developed as a firm, not so much ideas of what we did. And so I thought it'd be interesting. And my son was in the desert of Saudi Arabia and was sitting next to a guy in a tent named Michael Lindemeyer. And Michael and he were talking, and I think my son said, my dad is thinking of writing a book, but he didn't know how to write it and doesn't know what to do. And so Michael said, well, I could help him. I know. And Michael had written Philanthropy for Dummies and a number of the dummy books. And so and he had me as a dummy. I think, so anyway, he came and he and I sat in my house and Southern California, and we spent 2.5 days trying to scheme up a way to tell a story. And I didn't want it to be a textbook. I wanted it to be approachable. I wanted it to be easy to get through and not something you had to start at the beginning and go to the end. But you could drop in kind of wherever you want to and get some valuable feedback and things you can use as feedback to your people. So he came up and we came up together with an idea of these small chapters, and there are 64 of them, little chapters in the book. And so it was fun. And then he came up with sort of a format for each little chapter, and I would sit and write it. And it was one of the most interesting experiences. It took me about 6 months to do that. But it was a good experience to put all these ideas down, and people say you're going to write another book. And there's some things I didn't get in this book, and I've learned since the book was written that might be an addition or a revision of the book. But on the whole, I think most of my concepts and ideas are included. And certainly there are all sorts of other opportunities that I could put in and do, but I haven't figured out how to do another book. And maybe I don't want to do a top myself. I'd be happy to leave it where it is and see if it stands up for its own merits.
Well, then we're here more than standing up. Art, I'd like to talk about, if you're at liberty to share, is a really important part of this book in the preface is my dad was a great salesman who coached me early in life. How much do you feel that his influence in, obviously, your life and even your company?
Well, Dad was my mom and dad, I'm an only child, and mom and dad really did everything to help me, saved every dime they had so that I could go to college. I went to Cornell, and I'm very proud of that. I think I was on the wait list, and somehow I got in. So, you know, I know the struggle of getting in and the struggle of paying it. I mean, probably it cost them $2,000 or something, and now helping my grandkids in college, and it's $60,000 a pop. I mean, it's ridiculous. So, but the time changes everything. And so my dad was a great salesman, but he wasn't an administrator. And I remember he was just a bit too old to be drafted in the Second World War. And so he ran an office of Armstrong Cork Company in those days up and ran in New England. And they were basically selling floor covering and other things to the government because nobody else had businesses. And he helped that go. And then after the war, he was moved from New York up to Hartford, Connecticut. So I grew up in my early days in Hartford and West Hartford. And Dad was more interested in selling the things than he was in managing an office or things. And finally, after the war, they put a real manager in, and Dad came back to New York and was head of sales in New York for the acoustical ceiling division. And buildings were being built left, right, and center. And Dad would go and work with the architects and the owners of buildings to put in acoustical ceilings. And he was terrific, and then they wanted him to move to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where the headquarters was, and he said, I'm a salesman, I'm not an administrator, and I want to go out and keep selling. And he was not a very pushy guy at all, but he clearly was successful in that, although the thing I wondered, I probably didn't know enough to really wonder, was that he was always on a salary. He would never take a commission for his work, and had he taken a commission, he'd be very rich, but he wanted to make sure that that salary came in every month or every 2 weeks, whatever it was then, and he wanted to just make sure I got the money that I needed to go to college, and we lived in a nice place. We lived in Garden City, Long Island, which is a wonderful town, and a great high school. So I got a lot of input from Mom and Dad, but at a very unpushy way. The parents in those days, I was talking to somebody last night about helicopter parents, and I'm very upset about that. I think it's destroying them. There's an interesting book on coddling the student that's out now, and I actually got the copy of that from the president of Cornell, who I'm having discussions with about this whole issue of coddling students, but that's a whole nother story we won't go into on this podcast. But I do think that the idea of a father who is committed and interested in what you're doing, and then one of the joys was that after he retired, and he retired to a place called Rossmore in the East Bay of San Francisco, he was able to come in and see me and never coach me or anything, but see what I was doing, and it was able to enjoy the experiences as the firm grew, and people got to know my dad and my mom because I always invited them to the events that we had and have, and it was a real treat. So I'm very proud of my mother and father and miss them terribly, but I feel that they did a great job for me and launched me. And how I've gotten to where I am, I can assure you, one of the questions I've always asked is, did you ever think that you'd be a leader or founder of a very large organization? And I say, no, I hope to have six people that do garage remodelings. I didn't know. What did I know was going to happen? But I hired some absolutely incredibly talented people. And the other question I'm always asked is, how do you control all these people? And the answer is very simple. You don't. And anybody that tries to control people is going to lose. And it isn't about me. It's about us. It isn't about, the firm. It's about all of us, including the client. So I'm very comfortable with those kinds of things, which a lot of professionals are not. They want to... It's about them and how they get their recognition. And I never worried about the recognition, although I've certainly been honored enough. As you can see in this office of mine, I got more trophies than I know what to do with. But I don't brag about it. It's just, where the hell else do I put the stuff that I get?
So that early beginnings really, it sounds like, is the foundation or the principles that make a professional services company. Although you term it a professional services firm, it's actually about just human beings.
It's totally about human beings and building relationships. So we have a very strong culture, and what we do is build relationships with clients. We do great work, but in the process, it's not work that's great for us. It's great for the community of the building or the interiors in. It's based for the company. It's great for the people that work in those firms. It's not about us. It's about them. And if we do that, then they'll call us up and give us more work and more opportunities. And so we have probably today 300 or 400 clients that we just represent as a design firm. And they may, today, we may have clients that we work with all over the world and maybe working in 10 or 15 Gensler offices on different projects for them. And so we have a very deep client bench, very experienced, and we're blessed that it's the Fortune 500s and the top banks and the five top accounting and law firms. We dominate those industries in terms of opportunity. And so we learn from our clients as much as we learn from what we've done. We see what they do, and they're wonderful role models. And I've had the pleasure to meet some of the top people in the world and work with them. And I can tell you, I got more out of the experience and the opportunity than I was able to give to them. But I'm proud of what the firm has given to them, and they liked it enough and say, geez, we just really like working with your people. And to me, that's the ultimate comment. We want to do it again. And somebody was in my office this morning and kept saying, we turned a client down yesterday, and they said, no, we really want to work with you. And what they want us to do, we don't think we should focus our energies on. And so it's a matter of finding the right relationships and then supporting them.
Yeah. I like this. Also, you have a passion for sportsmanship. How did that come about? That you're a believer in good sportsmanship, and then it kind of taught you, a little bit about business and life?
Well, sportsmanship is a lot of things. It's one, how you handle yourself on the field or wherever you are. But it's, to me, more in almost every sport, tennis maybe not, which I played a little bit, but it's a team of effort. And a design firm today is not about an individual. It's about a team of being together, of which the client is a part of that team, and together making something special. So I think you need to be comfortable working as a part of a team, and it's so that it isn't about you, me, I. It's about how the group works together. And that's really important to me, and that's what sports teaches you. And the second thing, you don't win every game. And even the best, the Warriors I follow, and they lose sometimes awful and in terms of a game, that, and they're clearly the best team in basketball, but they have off nights. And, one of the things that's tough is any business where you're going out and making a pitch to do work for a client, you win some and you lose some. And some you lose because somebody else beats you because they're smarter and have better experience or better people than you do. And there are others that you stubbed your toe on and you just didn't do a good job, and your reputation on that area is not as strong as you'd like it to be. And so you don't win everything, and you don't always get your way. And that's really important. I mean, design is a very interesting thing. It's different than engineering. In engineering, you can do a calculation and determine whether the steel beam is going to support it or not. But in architecture and interior design, which are the two biggest parts of our business, graphic and branding, others are a part of our business. But those things are not, in many ways, they've got to function properly, but they could be a variety of solutions. They've got to look great, but the opinion of what looks great is wide as, and so we are not, as an organization, selling a style. We're selling solutions that we think are appropriate for our clients. And That's a whole different tack than people selling, you know, you go to Frank Lloyd Wright, you got a Frank Lloyd Wright building. I love Frank Lloyd Wright's work, but you come to Gensler, you have no idea what you're going to get, and I have no idea what we're going to give you or offer to you or share with you or develop with you, because it'll depend on the site, it'll depend on the budget, it'll depend on you, the client, what you want. I mean, one of my favorite stories of all time was I did two law firms in the Alcoa building early on in my career, and each took two floors in that building, and I was really excited about them, and we did them. And after the job were over, I was kind of proud of them both, and I got a call from one of the managing partners. He said, can you come over for just a bit? So I went over and saw him, and he said, I just wanted to tell you, Art, that we had a wonderful experience. We were really happy, and we think our office is absolutely terrific. But why did you do such a terrible job for the other firm? Well, I said, I think they're happy, but it's totally different, I recognize. And about 2 weeks later, I got a call from the other managing partner of the other firm. I wanted to just come over. And so I went over and he said, I just want to tell you, we had a wonderful time with your team and you, and we're so thrilled with our offices. But why did you do such a terrible job for the other firm? And I thought that was the most best compliment I ever got, because each was satisfied and happy. It reflected their organization and it reflected what they wanted to stand for. And one was very glassy and lots of open space and a lot of natural light. And the other was very lawyerly and a lot of paneling and a lot of, you know, detailing and things. And that was what they were comfortable with. And what we're, our job is to interpret that wish into something that's appropriate.
Excellent. Now, the earlier you spoke of in the book and you speak of in person, the earlier you learn the business skills, the better. Share with us why you believe that it's important that schools, universities, business schools integrate these skills into their programs.
Well, I wish that, and I'll come back to this, but I wish that they would more integrate business into the program. First, we are a business, whether we want to acknowledge it or not. I mean, we need to make a profit at some point, because all of us are not independently wealthy. When I started in the business, literally, there were a lot of architects who got in the business because their families were very rich and they never worried about making a profit. But I didn't start that way. As I said, I started with $200. So I needed to make a profit, and you need to make a profit to go forward and do the research and the thinking and the, have the proper facilities and offices and insurance and all sorts of stuff. Make a place that you're proud to bring clients. I like to bring clients to our offices, because then we've had all the resources right in there. If something says, well, I don't like that piece of carpet, that I don't like that, and you can race back, grab another one and say, how do you like this one? I mean, it's as simple as that. Or get me a copy of that drawing and we'll mark it up and we'll get somebody to draw it up right away and you take it out when you leave. So, and I'm very, very much interested in those kind of issues, and I think that we're getting pretty good at it.
When you say pretty good, like, how do you measure that standard?
Well, the measure I take is if the client comes back and walks by my office, as we're in now, and it's a glass wall, and they walk by with one of our people, and they say, well, I don't want to come in, and say, they're coming when they step in my, I don't have a door in my office, it's just open, but they step in and they say, just want to tell you the team's doing a great job for us. That makes my whole day. I may go and say to team later, I'd like to see what you're doing, just because I want to learn. We've worked for almost 40 years at the San Francisco airport, and we're doing Terminal 3 design work, schematic design work, and I've been on that account for 40 years. But I'm not very active in it right at the moment. I said, gee, I'd like to see it. And so a couple people came in yesterday and spread out on this desk, and we went through what they're doing. And it's, you know, it's unbelievable what they're doing. And it's first beautiful, but it functions and makes the customer experience so much better than it has been. And our success is, in that case, the airport director realizes that in our terminals we've worked on, the retail sales are almost 50% more than in the terminals that haven't been done. So people are stopping and using our restaurants, using our stores, and using things. And so that is like a $20 million additional opportunity, that the revenue going into the airport every year. And those are the real numbers in the airport. And they like what they get. And they get a building they can maintain, and it works well, and people feel good about it. And we find that people say, I want to fly it out of the airport because I like landing there and you're leaving. I mean, we had a wonderful session one day. We were doing the Central Terminal, which we had done originally 30 years before, and we did Terminal 2. And so what do we want this terminal to be? And there was a lot of, well, I want it to just, I'll keep the cost in line and this and that. And all of us said, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we greeted the customer rather than gets off the plane and make something special? God, I've arrived in San Francisco. Isn't this place wonderful? Because it's interesting that airline terminals are quite different than they used to be. The great halls of Grand Central Station and other things, you went into a great space, you bought your ticket, and that was the experience. You get off the train and you go walk away. Well, same thing in airports. The ticketing hall was the big experience. Now, the ticketing hall isn't the big experience. The ticketing hall is, you want to get through it as quick as possible and get on the other side of TSA, and then, okay, now I'm through this crap that I have to go to, and I've checked my own bag and put on my own bag tag, and everybody arrives with an e-ticket or something like that. So that whole experience, you know, isn't a pleasant one, and but you get through, and then it can be terrific. And so we wanted to make that experience better. And then we wanted to make the experience when you get off a plane, rather than being shoved in a basement and where there's, you know, bags, and there's usually no place to sit down, or it's not attractive, or it's gloomy and uninteresting, to make the bag claim experience robust and interesting one, and say, geez, I'm really happy to be in San Francisco. This is great. So we're trying to flip it. And one of the things somebody said, well, why don't we make it like a hotel, a grand hotel, make it hospitality? Let's make the bathrooms look like hotel restrooms rather than, you know, subway toilets. I mean, you know, ceramic tile walls with, you know, ceramic tile floor, and you can hose the whole place down, is not exactly what we want. And so if you go to SFO now, and the terminals that we've done, they're really quite elegant. They're like, you know, very palatial, nice stalls and wonderful sinks and assets and things. To be blunt, it's a pretty place to be in. It's not a dump, and nor should it be. And everybody uses it, so why didn't make it a pretty special place? You know, most people, that's an afterthought. And for us, it's a very important part. And for the San Francisco airport, so we had, everybody had little stickies that they could put, three of them, they could put two on cheap, and two on, you know, one on we got to go hospitality and spend more money. And these people were walking around shaking like they were nervous, putting it on the, well, we spend more money? I'm a staff member. I don't want to, you know, maybe my salary will get cut. I don't know if I don't bring it in low budget or something. But in the end, and the director and I were sitting there watching this, and it was really interesting. And all of a sudden, the tide turned, and everybody said, damn it, we got to do this thing right. Let's change the status of what we're trying to accomplish, and not just, you know, provide space and people to sit. Let's make it an experience that we're all proud of. And it's been very successful. We're doing all the construction you see now out at SFO is our stuff. And we're going to, that's the Terminal 1 that's under construction. It'll be, and then we'll take on Terminal 3.
That vision, that mindset, and that culture you share, again, in Arts Principles, even if the students or professionals have zero ambition of running their own firms, just their understanding of that is important.
Well, it's important because we're an ESOP company, employee stock ownership company. So everybody in this organization is an owner. And so I use the example, but if you steal pencils and pads out of the mailroom, you're stealing from yourself. I mean, people do take pencils and things for their kids at school, and that's part of, I guess, so that's fine. But you know, everything that you do will have an effect on the success of this firm, whether it's with a client or with, you know, financials or with the reputation that we've got within our community. And so I want everybody to understand that and understand that they make a difference. It's just not what I do or what our senior leadership people do. And so we grow for two reasons and two reasons only. People say, why are you so damn big? And we're really big for two simple reasons. One, the clients ask us to do work. And if we don't have enough people to do the work, we hire some more. That's the first. And secondly, I want people to come here and make it a career here. And we want that for the leadership. And so we're in the third generation of leadership, and they're working right now to get people ready to be the fourth generation of leadership. And so we want opportunities for people that come into the firm, not to say, well, look at all those people up there. I'll never get to that point. I've got to leave Gensler to go someplace where I could have a leadership position. So we've got 6,000 people, and over 1,000 people have leadership assignments in this firm. And, you know, you can lead a studio, you can lead a practice area, you can lead an office, you can be involved in a design task force that are doing special things. You can be in research. There's a lot of leadership opportunities in this firm, and that's why we've set it up the way we have, so that people can grow professionally and personally, and they can have more fun. And instead of thinking, well, I'm just there to collect the paycheck, that's and people in professional firms, the work that they do is really important to them. It's different than I'm there to get a paycheck and I'm going to go home and have a good part of my life. It's my life is the work that I do, and I want to make it fun, and I want to make it rewarding, and I want to make a difference. Our sort of mantra is we want to make the world a better place using the power of design.
Excellent. Excellent. Art, as always, it's an honor, pleasure, and of course, a joy being here with you today. Thank you very much. Look forward to our next show. This is fun. Art, you've been listening to Art's Principles radio show and podcast with Art Gensler, architect, entrepreneur, and founder of Gensler, now one of the world's largest and most recognized architecture and interior design firms. For more information, you're free to visit Gensler.com. That's Gensler.com. Join us again next time when we talk with Art Gensler on Art's Principles. Until next time, remember, architecture is an art form, but it's also a business. Designers need to be trained to solve their clients' problems through design while leading their own firms, large or small, to become sustainable practices. Quote from Art Gensler.
The Arts Principles radio show and podcast is recorded at the Gensler offices and studio in San Francisco, California. The recording engineer is Charlotte Thornton, and the executive producer is Tom Dioro, principal of Accurate Public Relations. If you wish to contact us, our email address is interviews@kzsu.stanford.edu. Again, that's interviews@kzsu.stanford.edu.